Creative Listlings together, in partnership rather with Yoko and the V&A Waterfront Artist Alliance, is providing emerging creatives with support, financial management guidance, and access to resources to help build sustainable businesses. So today I am joined by Creative Listlings and Yoko representatives. From Creative Listlings we have?
Tellyanne.
And from Yoko?
Marcello.
Marcello. So just to start things off, I think you can take this one. What is the business of Creative Workshop about?
Yes. So the business of Creativity Workshops are a series of workshops where we are equipping creatives and showing them that it's not so difficult to think like a business person, right? To you have the tools and resources and knowledge of the business side of your creative career or business or product. That's what we're doing over one day. Mm-hmm. It's a simple crash course on the business side of being a creative. So for all the way from business modeling, your financials, your tax, your legal, and then also your mental well-being of being a creative.
And I know the first one happened about, I think now it's a week ago, like a few days ago. Can you just take us through the other two that you guys have in the course of this year?
Yeah. So in partnership with Yoko and then also V&A Waterfront Arts Alliance, we are doing Durban next month on the 21st. And then in October, we are in Cape Town on the 12th of October. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And to Yoko, every time I think of Yoko, I think of small businesses. I think of shops that I go to. Just to try and explain your role in this whole workshop with Creative Listings.
Yeah, so for us, you know, the company started with the idea of helping small businesses grow and helping small businesses thrive, right? It should be easy to start, it should be easy to grow, it should be easy to scale. And we also wanted, from the beginning of the company, we wanted to kind of take a little bit of the headache out of running a business, you know? Mm. When somebody starts a business, they usually do it because they're passionate about something, they have a specific talent for something. Mm. You know, maybe you're great at baking, or you're a great painter, or you do great artwork, whatever it might be. And then also having to become a tax expert and a financial expert and a business expert and all of that takes you away from the thing you're really good at, right? And so what we really set out to do is taking away that headache and making it easier for people to focus on the things they're great at so that they can run and grow their business. And so we think of ourselves as enabler for small businesses and building the tools to help them, you know, accept payments, run their business and grow while being able to focus on the things they're great at primarily.
Okay. And also just the importance of these kind of workshops for creative. Can you just take us through why is it that me as a creative has to attend such a workshop?
Yeah. I think we're not saying that you must become the expert at those particular things. Yeah. We just want you to have the basic idea of what they are and how they can influence your decision, right? For example, most creators don't know how to price because they never think about pricing, right? Because they're waiting for somebody else to come and tell them what their value is. Yes. So we're saying take ownership of that role so that you're able to make better decisions and have a better quality of life. Mm-hmm. So by attending these workshops, you are equipped with the knowledge, right? So when you do want to do a tax, you don't have to do it yourself, yes, but you can get someone in, but at least you have understanding of what does it mean? What are they trying to do? Mm. What are they helping you with? When you're doing legal, so when you go out there, because they're not always going to be there with you because you can't afford them yet, right? To have 24-hour lawyer and all that kind of stuff. But at least you have the basic understanding. So when you're making decisions on the go, you have the right knowledge and tools and resources to be able to succeed and make a good career out of being a creative, basically. Yeah.
And once again, I will ask, how does Yoko now bridge that gap to say, good see? Do you focus on specific things when you're there, or do you, you know, just to understand your role in all of this?
Yeah. So for us, it's two things, right? So one is we're really excited for the work that the Creative Nestlings team is doing because we believe that creative and business shouldn't be two things that seem mutually exclusive, right? Creatives should be running businesses because that is what helps them grow. That is what helps them become successful. Mm. And then that is where we come in, right? We want to be able to then help them get paid, help them understand what to do with the data they get from the products they use. Yeah. We can also, based on the transaction history of a business, we can give them cash advances or working capital that then can help them buy material or, you know, maybe go to an expo or maybe hire people they need to get things done when it's busy. And so that is really where we plug in with I guess our products, yeah. But on a deeper level, for us, it's really, really important to just, you know, support small businesses from the beginning, not just wait until they're there and then wait for them to come to us, right? Mm-hmm. So we really want to kind of play that role in seeding the ecosystem and being there to help and support and being part of the journey as they grow.
Mm. And I don't know, this is for both of you. Why do you guys think there's this bridge between not getting that commercial viability when it comes to artists? Why is there a gap to the point whereby, you know, you don't realize there's this commercial space that can make me money of what I do? Because when you're creative, that's your talent, that's your passion, right? But how do we bridge that gap to make them go into a commercial space? But like, just for example, if they can't attend the workshop, for example, why do you think this happens to creatives where we forget about the money, but we love that, you know, we're for the passion? I don't know if any one of you can answer that.
I think it's this idea of purity when it comes to the passion, because I'm a painter, so now I want to only paint and that's what I think about, right? I do fashion, I only want to make clothes because it's fun, because I'm good at it and all that kind of stuff. And I think also there's a knowledge gap. I think with all the internet that we have and access to information, I think there's still a knowledge gap that is very nuanced to our environments. I think so people don't necessarily get information that's relatable to them. We're trying to make this information relatable so that they're able to still continue what they're doing, but then they have the knowledge and it's easy accessible. So by doing the workshops, we do a lot of content online and all that kind of stuff, so to bridge people that can't even get to our workshops and stuff. So I think that's the issue, that passion sometimes it overtakes the need for survival. Only when rent is due do you think, okay, cool, you know what, I should have made. So we're trying to bridge that, so it's embedded in you as you're thinking about your creative or your creative skill and you're executing it. Also think about the business side of it, so it's not a surprise at the end and all that. So think about the tax, so think about the legal, have it always as a tool in your toolbox, basically. That way you can leverage off what you have, basically.
And any comments from you?
Yeah, the only thing I would add is, I mean, obviously we're being almost very stereotypical here, right? Yes. Like there are many creatives that have made it and are successful, right? You just need to look at Black Coffee's Instagram, and I don't think he stepped foot on a normal plane in, you know, a couple of decades. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, there are lots of people who've made, you know, incredible commercial success with their art. So it's not everybody, but I think the challenge is that you're using different parts of your brain. And that's just something that's not natural to a lot of people, right? Like you if you're very commercially inclined, generally speaking, you tend to be a little less creative, right?
Yeah, that's true.
If you're very creative, generally you tend to be a little less commercially inclined, just simply because you're using very different parts of your brain, right? Like even biologically, these things sit in different parts of the brain. And so I think it's just about helping people bridge that gap a little bit and give people the things and the tools and even just the terminology sometimes, right? Like there was a conversation about IP, there was a conversation about these kind of things that if you've never heard about these things, you don't even know, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's just a little bit, like, helping people bridge that gap and helping them grow.
Do you think maybe, for example, with Black Coffee, do you think that he had access? I think that, and that's what, that I guess your workshop, you know, does really help in terms of that sense.
Yeah.
Is it the access that you end up, you know, seeing, actually, being a DJ can actually make tons of money, even end up, you know, international? Yeah. Is it the access?
I think definitely it's access to knowledge, access to opportunities to even have those kind of discussions. I think also as creators, there's many success stories that we don't tell, and I think that's always a challenge. I always give the example is that, for example, everyone's watching Netflix, right? That's a creative company. It's a tech company, but it's a creative company because it's content, right?
Content,
And I think we when we think of content, we think Instagram, Twitter. I'm like, wait, YouTube, all those companies are all part of the creative ecosystem, right? And they're making success stories out of everybody. Filmmakers, Martin Scorsese, all those big deal people. And you find actually a lot of them, either they stumbled upon the business side of things as they went along, or they had some access to knowledge and rooms to discuss the things, or they had a good team going forward or a good upbringing. So one thing we're looking at is the sooner we're able to kind of intervene with the knowledge in a creative career, I think the better it is for everybody else. But I think definitely there's good, some really good examples of success stories across the continent, across the world of creatives succeeding and making a living out of this. For us, our ethos at Creative Listings is that we want young people to make a good quality of life for themselves through creativity as a tool, basically. regardless of what they're doing, that's what we're focused on, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, I just wanted to ask Uguti, I know you guys have key topics part of the workshop, and one I really found interesting was the wellness.
Yes,
you know, a bullet way, because it speaks to a lot of us, because we don't take it seriously.
Yeah,
and we only take it seriously once we have the downfall and the
when
burnout.
It's too late.
Yes.
When it's too late, you know, now you have high blood. You have, and it's a personal story that's also happened to me. But because we don't take it seriously, why is it important for a creative person to actually take mental health seriously? It's because it's hard to even get a job, or it's hard to get money sometimes. You go through that depression.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So why should a creative take it seriously?
I think definitely take it seriously because it's important to part of your process, number one, your livelihood. This is your livelihood, right? Mm-hmm. Once you choose it to take it seriously and make it a part of your process, a part of your life, right? You want to pay rent, you want to make a living. So the better mentally you are, the more you are able to really scale and build a good life out of it, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to equip people with the right knowledge and tools so that they have better coping mechanisms when those hits come, when you don't kind of afford to pay for things, you know, because here's how you manage stress, here's how you manage opportunities. Mm. Also, when you're working with clients, there's a lot of stress involved in that. And the better you're able to manage yourself mentally, spiritually, and physically, the better you are able to show up for yourself and everybody around you. That's the whole point of doing that kind of program. Yeah.
Okay, and then I go to the finance part. You know, certain creators, hey, we blow it. But, you know, once you get like a lump sum of money, you go and you blow it, and then you end up on shows like I Blew It. Why? Well, no, I'm serious. I've seen a lot of creatives come on that show, and I'm like, but how did you blow all that money? Why is money important, and not to just overspend, but actually invest and make it grow? You know, as a creative, you know, it's not like you have a fixed salary. Yeah. Sometimes the money comes all lump sum, you know, and you just blow it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think it's true for all businesses, but I think for creatives, even more, it's that you need to think about the long term, right? Yeah. To your point, you might have somebody paying you a lot of money today, but then you don't know when you're going to sell your next piece or when the next client is going to come or when the next opportunity is going to come. And you need to make sure that you can, you know, kind of keep your lifestyle until then. And so you need to think of yourself as a business, right? Yes. It's not just, oh, I just won the lotto and now I blow it and I'm fine. Yes. You need to think of yourself as a business. You need to keep going and keep investing in the business so that it can grow. And I think if you, when people don't do that, they're essentially kind of shortchanging that chance of really growing and building a consistent success, right? Because there's a saying that like most overnight successes take 10 years where you know, like you need to invest consistently into your business, into your craft, into your art, and then it can really blow up. If you take your first paycheck and you blow it, then you're really kind of shortchanging your opportunity to grow. And so it's all about playing the long game, being consistent, and really looking at yourself as a creative business, and then making sure you have that runway for the long term.
Yeah.
And then I come to social media. As a creative, and I'm not talking about the content creators, I'm talking about the architectures, as you said, the artists. Why should they take that seriously? Because I know most people who do that just do it because, as mentioned before, they do it for passion, and that's their talent. But how can social media help that kind of a creative to actually showcase their work and, you know, reaching certain people?
Yeah.
Why is social media important?
I think social media is a tool for marketing, right, and amplifying what you're working on, but also building community. But and then also monetizing whatever it is that you're making, right? So if you're making art, I always encourage at least go out there and share the process of you making that art, what inspired it, or how long it took, and all that kind of stuff. Because then most buyers tend to want to be there for the journey, right? So they can also understand the value. I think as creators, we tend to hide the behind the scenes a lot.
Yes, yes.
And it's missed the value because now all they're seeing is the cup. But
the
they don't understand. The final product. But they don't understand.
It's
what
a
it
story
took.
People buy into more than anything.
Because that's what I buy into on social media.
So I think it's super important. Social media does that very well. It's one of the most easily accessible tools that allows you to amplify your work around the world. We see the loyal creatives that are not known here, but they're known around the world. And that's because social media, right?
Yes.
So I think that's why you should take it seriously as a tool to enhance whatever they're doing, basically.
I think to Jillian's point, social media is just such an incredible global leveler.
Yeah. Right? It connected the world.
It connected the world, right? Yeah. You can sit here in Joburg, you can sit somewhere else, and people from anywhere in the world can access your work and engage with your work. That is incredibly powerful, right? Yeah. Obviously, it's noisy. There are many people doing it. It becomes competitive. Like, all of that is true. But if you think about, like, a channel to put your art into the world, like nothing is more powerful and scalable than social media, right? Yeah, so it's incredible.
And also, I'm going to support, right? When your family supports you or people around you support you, you do well as a creator.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm going to say this, but most black parents don't get when you say to them, Mama, I want to be on your TV. Mama, I want to... They don't take it seriously because they don't see the financial value of it, right? And I don't blame black parents for thinking that way because we come from a past that, you know, black people are not seen. Now, here we are. Black people want to be artists. Black people want to be, you know, presenters. Black people want to be musicians from a young age. But the parents are the hurdle. They don't see where, like, hey, what's this going to do? Yeah. But why is that support from your parents or from your family important for you to go and keep pushing?
Yeah. We get a lot of parents asking us, my child wants to do A, B, and C.
I'm glad the parents are also
right?
attending.
And because they're curious and understanding how does it all work and how do you get paid out of it. I always give the example, the clothes you're wearing right now, a fashion designer had to make it.
That's
creativity.
That's true.
Right. You go into a store to buy it, Ackermans or Gucci or wherever it is. That's all part of the fashion industry, of fashion and creative industry, right? So I think there's a misunderstanding of the value of the creative industry, particularly in Africa. We don't measure it well and how it contributes to the jobs. I think it makes about 2 million jobs, about $9 billion in terms of value. It's even one of the biggest industries compared to agriculture. So the food we eat and the creative industry are on par in terms of GDP and contribution and all that kind of stuff. And I think we're not having that dialogue. So we can explain to our parents that, okay, cool, there's careers in this, right? It's not just about the glam. There's a whole behind-the-scenes team. Now you have a bunch of people, right, helping you with the podcast. So there's many jobs in there. And I think on the continent, we've not done a good enough job to highlight the jobs and the salaries. People get paid a lot of money for those things that we take for granted sometimes as people. I think there's a misunderstanding and a misalignment of what the creative industry value is. Particularly, and also I think if you look going to the hood, there are not a lot of heroes that come out of the hood that are all in all these different industries, like an architect. We take it for granted because our architect, some guy just making something there.
I think most parents, when they're like, you want to be an architect, they're like, good for you, my child. Not a singer or presenter.
I guess
with architecture.
Yes. And I think there's a misunderstanding that the creative industry is big and vast. And there's different roles that we play in it. And that it's actually a GDP contributor. It's part of society. It's embedded in society. That generation is sure that they're watching. Is part of the creative industry, and I think it's important to highlight that and give some good examples. I think we need to be doing more highlighting of people that have come from those neighborhoods, those environments, and how they've been able to do. Because there's multitudes. It's not just musicians only. It's not just presenters only. It's multitudes of people that are doing amazing stuff in the creative industry. And I think just highlighting it is super, super important. And also, once they support you, then you're able to scale, number one, create jobs for other people. And I think that's another thing is that the creative industry is one of the only places where right now, it's one of the biggest contributors of jobs because as long as you're talented or skilled, you can participate in it. It's a low barrier to entry. And that's super, super important, particularly for the young black child to participate into. Because now at least you see your peers, you're able to execute, experiment, and grow regardless of what talent you have.
Do you think, when I make it a bit political, the government is also to blame for this because they have the highest power in the country to showcase anything that they want to showcase, but I do feel as though even government doesn't take creative seriously. I mean, we hear people, actors, that you know, veterans, that say, I'm still not getting paid enough.
Yeah.
So are they also kind of to blame for not us knowing a lot about the different sectors of the creative industry? Because when I think of creative industry, I literally think of TikTokers, YouTubers, but you forget because it's more than that.
So the 16 creative industries, basically, bundled up together that tamed the creative and cultural industries. And I think governments definitely have a role to play, right? I mean, there have been policies that are shaping the creative industries nowadays. There have been some entities coming up, like particularly in South Africa. I think South Africa is one of the best investments compared to the rest of the continent when it comes to the creative industries. There's more opportunities here from a government level. NAC, BASA, NFVF, and all, and like DSAC and everything. I think there's just a misalignment between the creative industry, the creatives themselves, and government policies, right? And having that bridge, I think, is super important. Something that we're trying to play at is that, that policy, shaping that policies is super, super important. So we try and interface as much as possible with governments, wherever we go on the continent and stuff. I think definitely there is a role to play for government for amplifying, because like I mentioned, when a politician says, yeah, the creative industry, I think our parents would take it more seriously.
Yes, yeah. Compared to us saying, right?
I think definitely we need to work with government to amplify the role that the creative industry has in society from a from a job creation, from a from a GDP perspective, and from a social cohesion perspective. They are trying, but it's, I think it's not, nowhere enough. near enough on a country scale. And I think there's an opportunity there. Yeah.
And from your side, do you think, you know, government can play its role? I mean, you guys also decided let's invest in this thing. Do you think it's time that government also tries and invest in certain workshops and, you know, certain,
I mean, look, maybe an example I can mention that I, and it's now coming up as I, as we were talking, if you look at, like, Netflix now has actually a really interesting collection of very, very local movie productions, right? Yes. You can find, like, Danish soap operas and Turkish movies and actually lots of South African really interesting stuff too.
Users there.
And if you look after the movie, if you look at the credits, I know for a fact that especially in a lot of the European countries, they're actually like government movie funds, right?
Yeah.
You would find like whatever the Danish movie fund has invested into that movie. And it allows a lot of these countries to, you know, punch above their weight from a cultural importance perspective, right?
That's true.
I mean, like Denmark versus South Africa shouldn't even be a debate, right? Whatever, like 10 times the size, if not more. So I do think you see countries where the government invests more, that it does have a really important impact. The other thing I do also want to call out, though, is like I think there's also a responsibility of the people in a way, right? Yeah. Because at the end of the day, like whether it's explicit or not, but we all make choices of what we consume, right? Like you choose what clothes to buy, you choose what music to listen to, you choose what movies to watch on Netflix, you choose what, whatever, like theaters or play to go to. And I think we sometimes have a tendency of almost like overvaluing foreign stuff over local stuff. I mean, it's changing quite dramatically, right?
So better now,
there's a lot of change that's been happening in the past few years. But I do think at the end of the day with these things is like the consumer speaks the loudest, you know? If we all go and say, hey, we're going to focus on buying from local clothing designers, right? That's going to help the industry more than anything.
Yeah.
If we all go and say we're going to watch whatever, local plays at the theater. Then it's also going to legitimize the industry as a whole, right?
Yeah.
Because if our parents go and watch local plays, they're going to see, oh, they're like, you know, this is done by somebody from here.
Yeah.
The people playing are from here. Then it's going to elevate it and it's going to make it more than, you know, when you want to write a play or when you want to become a dancer or whatever it is, they're role models, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think to your point, yes, there certainly is a role of the government, but I do think that at the end of the day, we have so much power with the decisions we make on a day-to-day basis.
True. Right? 100%.
Because I think of a brand like Umakhosa, right?
Yeah.
There's this thing in South Africa where if things are made in South Africa, it has to be cheap, right? So I'm serious. Even me, like, you know, when I saw Umakhosa's prices, I'm like, no, that's crazy. But what he's done is that now his brand is so international than it is locally. Do you think there's also that problem of support from, as you said, the people?
The people.
The South African people to actually support your brand. You know, I also think of like a Tyler. Tyler's been around for so long. But she popped in America. She popped in, you know, Hollywood. Now she's the biggest thing. Like, there's this thing of us as South Africans not supporting each other. I don't know if you've realized that, especially in the creative sector.
Yeah, I think, I mean, in any communities, support is super, super paramount for success and for scalability. I think just like I mentioned earlier, there's misalignment of value, right? And Makosa is more for a high level brand, right? It's trying to be a luxury brand, basically. It's a luxury brand now with global appeal. There are a lot of other local brands that are on the ground that are more price kind of sensitive to the local consumer and all that kind of stuff, right?
Okay.
I think just platforming that is super important. I think Yoko does a very good job of that, of platforming some of these designers. So if you can't afford a Makosa, at least you can buy a Boys of Soweto, all those different brands, and all that kind of keep wearing now. You're able to buy like all those different brands that are available. And I think as the creative industry grows with more infrastructure development, I think one thing that's missing is infrastructure development. That's where government can really play, and also private sector infrastructure development to allow these young designers then to be able to manufacture local. That way they're able to price for the local market better and all that kind of stuff. I think it's growing, and there are more brands that are available that people can buy into. I mean, a good example is Batu.
Yeah, Batu, yeah.
Came out of nowhere, right? Mm-hmm. A big sneaker brand came out of nowhere, but people are buying it. And the cool thing is that it's not just the creatives only buying Batu. It's the local day-to-day person rather buy a Batu than anything else. And funny story, Batu, we funded Batu, his first 1,000 pairs as creative nestlings under one of our incubators and stuff. Mm-hmm. And to see that scalability, like 30 stores now, Temple of the G-Makers opening up a store in Santon.
I think it was yesterday.
Yeah, we invested in him also. Oh, okay. Yeah. So definitely with the investment in infrastructure development, the prices can be for what we need now, what people can afford in South Africa. True. But that requires a lot of back-end work and all that kind of stuff.
Temple jeans are expensive. No, I'm just saying. So my next question would be like, why is it important for the private sector to collaborate kind of with the public sector? I don't know if I'm making sense.
Yeah.
I think you can answer that. Why is that important, that partnership between private and public?
I think it's one of these things where in many cases the one cannot exist without the other. Or they can help each other accelerate each other, right? Yes, so yes. I do think it's important. I don't think you should rely on it, right? It's because these things are difficult. They take time. Mm. They're often complex. Mm. But I do think it's one of these things where, like, if you get the collaboration right, it just has this kind of compounding, accelerating effect. And I think that's something very special.
And then I come to the question of, during the first workshop or throughout the years, what have you really picked up of the issue in the creative sector? I know you said research, but just wanted you to elaborate on that because I was off air.
Yeah.
Why is research? What was the one thing you guys noticed throughout the workshops?
I think there's a misunderstanding of what the creative industries are, right? With like $2 trillion globally, the creative industry is that, the contribution to GDP, global GDP and stuff, right? Mm. Big stake. You know, we compete with like some of the biggest industries in the world and all that kind of stuff. I think that's number one. So creatives don't know that they're playing part of a bigger picture.
Yes.
Right. So they're playing within their small, you know, I'm playing my in Bramfontein or Rosebank or Soweto and all that kind of stuff, and that's about it. Whereas by doing research, you understand how big this is and how you can scale even locally, grow locally and all that kind of stuff. By doing the research, you can price better, understand your materials better, understand how to manufacture better, I don't necessarily always research, right? So, because they don't realize the information they require is on Google, it's available easily, and all that kind of stuff. And I think super, super important that we're trying to teach people, okay, cool, you don't have to be the expert, but you just have a basic understanding of it. That way, when you do need to make a decision, life becomes a bit easier. So that's one thing I've picked up over the years, that research is a key thing. It's an enabler. The more knowledge you have, the better decisions you're able to make.
That's true.
Right? Yeah. Financially, time, mental wellness, and all that kind of stuff. And that's all information that you need to find out there to how to better treat yourself, how to better work for yourself, and how to work within your community and stuff. So research, I think, is a key thing. And we've been trying to emphasize that as much as possible. So that way you are able to make the right decisions basically as a creative and succeed and thrive and create jobs amongst your peers and all that kind of stuff.
And what are some of the things that a creative can benefit from using a platform like Yoko, for example? I'm sure there are various ways, because he did kind of mention to me some of the things you guys do, but I just wanted on air for maybe a creative that's listening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So there are a couple of ways we can help, right? So the first one is accepting payments.
Yeah.
You know, people know us for the card machines. But we also offer online payments, so you can send payment links on WhatsApp. You can integrate it into your online store, and it all goes into the same platform, right? So you can get paid in person and online, which is the first step to running a business, right? The second thing is we have a bunch of software and tools to help you run your business. So get your stats, get your numbers, get insights into your business, understand how things are flowing and over time, and how things are improving. And then the other thing I mentioned earlier is also the kind of working capital, right? So on the basis of your transactions, we can offer then very, very accessible working capital options to help you grow.
Okay.
So that's kind of how the Yoko platform can help. But then we're also investing more and more into the community around it, yes. Right? So how do we get people who run businesses to then connect with each other, learn from each other, exchange? What role can we play in terms of sharing knowledge, sharing insights, helping people grow? And so that's kind of the whole package in a way, and the way we're trying to help small businesses grow, essentially.
Okay. And just the importance of having a mentor. I think most creatives forget that let me get a mentor to help me. Why is it important to have a mentor? Yeah. That's not jealous about you. Because these days, no, so in 2024, we live in this time where it's hard to find a proper mentor, someone to literally take you through what they've gone through. That's me. That's my point of view. We don't have that these days.
Yeah. I think I always say, like, the challenge with getting a mentor is, right, we're working, I would call them young industries here locally. Mm. So you're not always going to find people that have gone through what you, like, similar stories to yourselves and all that. Yeah. I prefer peer-to-peer mentorship.
Okay.
Where your peers are your mentors.
Oh, okay.
Right? They're going through some different things that you could learn from, could exchange. That's why our community, Creative Nestlings, is built on peer-to-peer mentorship. Right? We do have some mentorship programs where we bring someone who's been there for like 10, 20 years and all that kind of stuff. Someone's kind of coming in. Right? And we facilitate those conversations so it's in a safer environment, basically, and also more time sensitive because people are busy with their own lives and all that kind of stuff. But I would encourage more peer-to-peer mentorship than trying to find a big mentor. You find enough, when you have good peer-to-peer mentors, it becomes easier than when you do get a mentor. To really get value from them, right? Okay. And I think peer-to-peer mentorship is one of the strongest things I've seen work so far.
I think that's such an important point because what we underestimate so often is that even peers, right? Like, I would have learned something that maybe Dylan is struggling with, right? Maybe he's learned something over his time working that I'm struggling with, right? Yeah. It doesn't need to be this thing of like, oh, let me put this person on the pedestal and this is the mentor and this is like one-way relationship, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot just around like he's figured something out that I can learn from. The other way around, there's other people in our networks that we can learn from. And that is so powerful because I think often people, we've placed so much emphasis on this mentorship topic sometimes
Then
it almost becomes a blocker for people, right?
Yeah.
Where then people go and say, oh, like, I can't do anything now because I don't have a mentor. Oh. When in reality, you have so many people around you who, they're also still learning, but they may have learned something that you're currently struggling with, or they just have an idea, or they've read something that could be interesting for you. Mm. So I think just to Dylan's point, like, don't underestimate your peers. And the people around you, because you can learn from all of them.
Definitely, that's my team. So they are my mentors from here on. Just for people, maybe someone listening in KZN wants to be part of the workshop. Where do they go? How do they get a ticket?
Yeah.
Just that's the final question I have. Someone from KZN, I know the next one is in KZN, but how can they get access to it? Where do they register?
So they just go to our website, Creative Nestlings, NESTLINGS.com. Our tickets are available there. It's free.
You know, I have to ask that.
it's free because
we gotta ask that. Yeah,
we believe that knowledge should be free. Right. We're trying to democratize this space, so it's easily accessible for everybody.
Yeah.
So we make it free, and through the support of people like Yoko, Waterfront Arts Alliance, we're able to make it as free as possible. Mm. Yeah.
So do I have to prove that I'm a creative, or
no? Okay. Just show up.
Sure, that's so risky. What if random people show up? You know what I mean?
I get you. It's always funny because you always get that one outlier that is not necessarily seeing themselves as a creative, like a doctor or something like that. But you find that actually changed their lives completely, that they start practicing as a creative at one point.
Yeah.
Creative's been there for like since 2011. We get a lot of stories like, oh, I went to one of your talks or one of your workshops or one of your dinners, whatever. Mm. And then they'll be like, oh, actually, that changed my entire life. From the, like 5 years later on, I'm a creative. I'm practicing. Oh, I saw the art piece. Oh, I'm still a doctor, but now I'm painting more. Yeah. Or like, so we always allow anyone to show up. Okay. Capacity dictates how many people we can take but we try and make it as open as possible. We also have a WhatsApp group, a WhatsApp channel, just look for creativeness links. Yeah, it's all on our website, basically.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for making time to speak to me. And I hope someone out there who's a creative now knows the information and, you know, where to go to from here. So thank you, man. This might help certain creatives out there.
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure.